You ready?
Yep.
Okay, today we are going to talk about the refugee protests. Okay, today's video is called Refugee Riots, Salience and Storytelling. And what I want to do today is look at the recent growth in refugee asylum seeker protests here in the UK. And I want to use it to explain some really important terms and concepts about media, and in particular, economics and political media. We're going to talk about salience, storytelling, wedge issues, and the bifurcated society, and you're going to understand how the media works. Okay, so first, a little bit of context for our international viewers. In the last month or two, there have been lots and lots of protests outside hotels, which are being used by the government to house asylum seekers. Asylum seekers have come, they have not been processed, and they're being put up in hotels, and it has led to lots and lots of protests all over the country by British people saying they're not happy with asylum seekers being kept in hotels. Okay, so for a long time, I avoided speaking about immigration on the channel because I am an economist and I like to focus on the economy and things which I'm an expert on. But we started to see a couple of years ago, like the growth and the growth and the growth in people talking about immigration in the comments, basically saying, what you're talking about, the problem is not rich people, the problem is not inequality, the problem is immigration, why don't you talk about that? And we saw the popularity of this grow and grow and grow, and it started to become increasingly clear that basically anti-immigration sentiment was becoming basically the key opposition to ideas about taxing the rich. So I did a video a couple of years ago, my first video on immigration, which we'll link here so you can see, and really, by and large, I haven't touched it so much since, but I wanted to do a video on it now because I think it's again become really relevant to our work on dealing with the problem with the economy, dealing with the problem on inequality. And I think what we've seen is, I came back from holiday about 2 months ago now, 2.5 months ago. And at the time, it really felt like we kind of had our foot on the neck of the media, basically. Everybody was talking about wealth taxes. Everybody was constantly asking politicians, why don't you do something about wealth taxes? Why don't you do something about inequality? And there was kind of an effort made by the media, especially by the right-wing media, to kind of discredit the ideas on wealth taxes. And really, to be honest, it kind of failed. I think they didn't really successfully poke many holes in the idea of taxing the rich more, in the idea of doing something about inequality. And it felt like we had won the argument. But then what basically happened was the media pretty much stopped talking about inequality and started to talk more and more and more and more about refugees and asylum seekers and these protests at these hotels. And what this teaches us is the importance of the first media idea we're going to explain today, which is salience. Okay, so what is salience? I'm going to explain what salience is by telling a story about when I first started talking about economics in the media. So I started this YouTube channel in 2020, and at the time I started to do quite a little bit of like radio, talking about inequality, talking about the economy. I was lucky because I was one of the first guys who realized there was going to be a big inequality crisis, that there was going to be a big inflation crisis. So I started to tell everybody about it, and I went on loads and loads of radio shows. If you look back through this channel, through like the really, really, really early videos, we used to upload all of my radio interviews. So you'll see them on there. And you'll see I was basically saying like years in advance, we were going to have an inequality crisis and we're going to have an inflation crisis. And I was in a really strong position basically because I was a very good economist. I had a very good history. I was one of the top traders in the city, and economists who are this good basically don't normally appear in the media because they get paid a lot more to work for banks. So in my personal opinion, I was kind of head and shoulders above the competition talking about the economy. I went on loads of shows. I spoke about the economy. I was doing really well. And eventually I got invited to go on with Nick Ferrari, who is the most right-wing presenter on LBC. So again, for our foreign viewers, LBC is like a really popular talk radio show in this country. People call in, they talk about the politics, mainly politics, the economy, social issues. And they like to consider themselves like neither left nor right. They have like more left-wing presenters like James O'Brien, and they have more right-wing presenters like Nick Ferrari. And Nick Ferrari is considered the most right-wing one. And I got called up late one evening. I was playing football with my friends, and they wanted me to come on and talk about what I thought was the economy, basically. And I broke my rib playing football, but I really wanted to do it because Nick Ferrari is like their big presenter. So I barely slept and I went on early in the morning on Nick Ferrari. And I want to talk about the economy. I want to talk about inequality. I wanted to talk about how COVID was massively increasing inequality, how it was going to cause an economic crisis. And what Nick Ferrari did was he didn't allow the conversation to ever be about anything except for extremely narrow consumption decisions about what kind of energy provider an ordinary family uses. And every time I tried to move it to something bigger about the economy, about inequality, he was like, what energy provider should our viewers use? Again and again and again. And that is an example of salience, because salience is not about winning the argument, it is about controlling what topics are discussed. It's about controlling the topic of discussion. And once you start thinking about salience, so my background is not in media. My background is in maths and economics and trading. And in my heart of hearts, I'm like a very sort of logic-y, maths-y guy. And I think a lot of people like that, they think that political debate is about debate and about winning the argument. I make my points, you make your point, and we the public will decide who's the winner. But what this Nick Ferrari interview showed me is a massive thing that you can do is to make sure you basically understand what is it that my opponent is good at? What area is he good at? What area is he weak at? What area am I good at? What area am I weak at? And you make sure that you only ever speak about the area that you are strong at, and you don't allow the subject to be anything that your opponent might be good at. That is controlling the salience. Salience is basically how visible a particular topic is. So rather than try to win the debate, you try to make sure only one side of the debate is visible, has any volume, gets heard, and that is the side of the debate, upon which you are strong. And this idea of salience in a debate or in a conversation, which if you keep an eye out for it, you will see all over the media. You will see everybody doing it in every political conversation. It doesn't just apply to an individual conversation or an individual debate. We can apply it to the media as a whole. One media show, or basically like the whole media, like all of the TV, all of the newspapers, all of the online, social media. What topics are getting discussed? And what topics are not getting discussed. And back when I came back from holiday in late June, early July, the economy and inequality and taxation of the rich were being discussed every single day on every single news show. We had massive salience. We were the issue that was being spoken about. We were the issue that was dominating media time. And now, if you look at the TV, what you see is immigration and asylum seekers and refugee riots, refugee protests outside hotels are being spoken about much, much, much more. And issues of inequality, taxation, distribution have kind of been put on the shelf, which basically means we, as much as we maybe won the argument on the economy, we are now losing the battle for salience. So, how do you win the battle for salience? And that brings us to my next important point, which we're going to discuss about the media, which is storytelling. Okay, so storytelling. Now, if you have been watching for a long time, you'll know this, or if you go back and watch some of our older videos, I have been saying for years that in this country, what would happen was Rishi Sunak would fail really badly for popularity. Keir Starmer and Labour would have a massive electoral win. Then Keir Starmer and Labour would fail really badly. And then Nigel Farage and Reform would win. I've been saying this for years. I said this is right back when Boris Johnson was still Prime Minister and Rishi Sunak was coming in. So I've made a lot of very good, correct predictions on politics, which were not consensus at the time. And the way I've been able to make these correct predictions is simply through understanding two things, which is the economy and storytelling. Okay, so it wasn't particularly difficult to predict the failure of successive UK governments if you understand our basic economic problem, which is we have rapidly growing inequality of wealth that is sucking wealth out of the middle class and the government, which is sucking spending power out of the economy. It's accumulating wealth with the very rich, which is driving asset prices up, which is making it harder for ordinary people to live. Because we knew that both Rishi Sunak and the Conservatives and Keir Starmer and Labour would come in and do nothing about this growing inequality, we basically knew that they would fail economically. It's like you've got a hole in the bottom of your boat. Wealth is sucking out of that hole at an unbelievably rapid, accelerating pace. If you don't patch that hole, you're going to fail. So it was relatively easy to know that we would have a sequence of failing governments. But how was I able also to predict the rise of Reform and the rise of Nigel Farage, who, for those of you who might not know, who are not from the UK, are our sort of new far-right party and leader? That was because I understood the importance of storytelling. So when you have an economic crisis, especially what we have had in the last 5, 10, sort of coming up to 20 years now, a long-term economic crisis, which seems protracted, feels like it has no end, feels like it's going to get worse and worse. Ordinary families are really struggling. You create this urgent need in the mind of the public for something new, something different, right? People do not want their... People can have a sense for like the direction that their country is headed and the direction that living standards are headed. And if you go to a place like India or like China, where living standards have for a long time been worse than they are in the UK, because people have a sense that life is getting better and their kids will be richer than they are, they're happy to accept that. But when people sense that their life is getting worse, people really worry and people don't consider that to be acceptable and they want something different. And what people think they want is like a new economic model or a new way of dealing with the economy that doesn't collapse. But the truth is, or then maybe they want a new political system, but the truth is most people are not experts on the economy and politics. And what people really want is a new story. People want there to be a new story that does not involve their kids being poor, that does not involve them getting worse and worse off over time. And it creates this massive demand for basically a new story. There's this quote that I use from Milton Friedman, the American economist, which is, at times of crisis, the solution will be chosen from the ideas lying around at the time. If you have a collapsing economy, it creates what I think of as a kind of economic boom for stories and ideas, which is when people are extremely unsatisfied with the status quo, they start to look around and think, well, what are our other options? And that meant that because we knew we would have a sequence of failing governments, because the governments wouldn't deal with growing wealth inequality, anybody who could put together a compelling story that was different, that was new, would inevitably get drawn into power. And what really matters with regards to these stories is, again, the salience. So when the economy is collapsing, lots of different people will have lots of different ideas about how do we fix the economy. And basically, whichever one is loudest is going to be the guy that will win. When you understand this basic idea, number one, until we deal with growing inequality, living standards continue to worsen, which means we have this continuing sense of collapsing economy and desperate need for change. You kind of always know what's going to happen in politics, which is whoever is the loudest alternative voice at any point in time is going to win the next election. And Labour won the last election with a very, very simple story of the Conservatives are really shit, let's kick them out. And that basically won. And that was the dominant story of the time. But then Labour come in and you get this even deeper kind of story power vacuum, essentially, which is, in this country, we've only had two political parties in power for nearly 100 years, essentially. And one of them was massively discredited. Then the other one comes in, basically purely on the story of we are not the first party, and they become massively discredited. And really, you end up in a situation of whoever can control the media salience, whoever has the biggest story of being new and different, will become prime minister. And if you look at the situation now, it was always pretty clear that Nigel Farage and Reform and the far right would win. And I want to be clear, when I say that, this is not at all UK specific. The same thing is happening in basically every country in the entire Western world. When your centre left has no story and your centre right has no story, really anyone else who has a compelling story can basically walk into your president's or prime minister's office. So that is where we are basically. We have this collapsing economy. We have this vacuum of stories. And it becomes, in a bizarre way, like fantastically easy to become president or prime minister. And that is why you're seeing across the world sort of random guys who were not even politicians, were not even political parties, which didn't even exist recently, suddenly turning up, becoming president, becoming prime minister. You know, you saw Macron in France, we saw Trump in the US, we've seen the collapse of, you know, we've seen the rise of the far-right parties basically across Europe, new political parties taking power in Italy. When the economy is collapsing, anyone who can tell a compelling story will be able to take control of that country. And the problem with that at the moment is, really, if you look around the political world, at the moment, there are basically no loud stories other than the far right. So the far right has like a pretty clear story that everybody knows. Like if I were to pull someone in my country and say, what do you think Nigel Farage or Reform stand for? What do they believe? If I did the same thing in your country, wherever you were, people would know. They say they want there to be lower immigration. They want there to be fewer asylum seekers. You know, that's like, that's what they want. It's really, really clear. But if I was to ask somebody, what is the story of Labour or Keir Starmer in this country? If I was to ask somebody, what is the story of the Democrats in your country? I don't think they would know, you know. You know, and there are groups of politicians in society. You know, I went on The Rest Is Politics a few weeks ago, which is the biggest politics podcast here in the UK. If you want to see it, you can. There are the videos there online. And it's a very high profile podcast, and it's two sort of centrist politicians. One is from the centre left party, one is from the centre right. They're neither of them active in politics anymore. You go on there, there's a lot of hand-wringing about the failures of Labour, the failures of the Conservative Party, the failures of the far right, Reform and Nigel Farage. And for all that they like to criticise the existing political system, what is their story? What is their story? I mean, I think it seems to be largely about criticizing other groups. So that's where we are. You know, if we talk about the left, if I was to bring someone in on the street and say, what do you think, you know, the left believes in this country? What is their story? You know, differentiate a little between the center and the center left and the left. The center right, the conservatives are basically dead. Really what you have is you only have one group that has a story. And people get behind that story, they support that story. And in the absence of competing stories, basically you win. So we have this period of time where there's this massive absence of stories, which creates this unbelievable power of storytelling. And yet seemingly no group in society other than the far right has been able or is able to tell a compelling political economic story. So now we've established these two really important concepts that you need to understand if you want to take political power: salience and storytelling. I want to talk about another element which the far right and the refugee protesters have done really well in understanding these concepts. So one of these protests, which they're very regular now, is super, super close to where I live. And I went down there with Jack, the cameraman, who films these videos, a few weeks ago. To be honest, more than anything, just to sort of witness what was happening, because I was worried, I am worried about this sort of growing movement. And one thing that I found really, really interesting that I saw there was there were enormous, the actual number of protesters. So there were protesters protesting against hotels, and there were counter-protesters protesting against the protesters. The number of protesters was not that huge, but what there were a huge number of was citizen journalists. And what I mean when I say citizen journalist is somebody who's not presumably a professional journalist, just a guy or a woman with a camera, sort of live streaming, doing selfies, showing the protest and uploading the video to Facebook. And there were loads and loads and loads of these guys. And it was really, really noticeable how much media presence there was relative to what was actually a relatively small protest. And I think what that shows is basically that the far right has done a much better job, in a sense, of understanding storytelling and salience, and also understanding a thing which I've spoken about a lot on this channel, which is the need to be present online. So I think a thing has happened in media, especially politics media, in the last few years, which is there has been a massive shift towards online media. I think this was really accelerated during COVID, which is more and more and more people want to get their news online, on Instagram, on YouTube, on Facebook. And it has created this real opportunity to aggressively dominate the salience of online platforms, because the existing media institutions like BBC, Sky News, the existing political parties have just been slow to move into it. And what is interesting about these citizen journalists is these citizen journalists, individually, the vast majority of them, won't get anything like the number of views that we get on this video, that we go on our channel. But the way that they succeed is that there is simply an enormous amount of them. And I think what this shows is, in a weird way, it's kind of inspirational, because I've been saying for a long time, you know, I made the decision, rather than writing for the big newspapers, to try to do a push for online and a push for social, because I felt that that's where people were. And recently, I've been trying to encourage our viewers, you, to create more yourself and to make more videos yourself and throw things out there. And that is basically because people are online nowadays, and there's this massive space. I think what you see is stories are these really interesting things. Stories are kind of like, they're like a computer virus in a way. Like, we like to think that the media comes in and decides what stories get placed where. But as the media has lost power and people have moved online, you're kind of seeing it's more like a kind of like a virus model, almost like this COVID model, which is if enough people get out there and spread it, it can spread really, really quickly. And you can dominate the salience of a subject without necessarily having that top level media support. And I think that is what the far right have done super, 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 super well. And they've created this kind of, I mean, obviously, they do have media support. They do have financial support. We have things like GB News in this country, which is, you know, a very well-funded, loss-making media channel that supports these far-right ideas. You have, obviously, people like Elon Musk buying things like Twitter. But they have really effectively spread these messages from the ground up, from the bottom. And I think, really, we need to learn a lesson from these guys, which is, I think people like me, I need to be constantly making these ideas, these messages, the idea that the problem is inequality, the idea that living standards will get worse because of growing inequality. I need to make that as simple as possible again and again and again, so that people like you can take the message and run with it. I think what you've seen also with these guys is basically the importance of being like multi-platform. So we're really popular on YouTube, we're really popular on Instagram, we're popular with like basically younger people, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s. We're less popular with older people in their 50s or 60s. And that is largely because those guys are on Facebook and we are not popular on Facebook, basically. So what you have seen is, and this is the last concept I need to add before I get onto, well, one more. Phenomenal ability to craft a simple message, give it to ordinary people, and this unbelievable message discipline around a simple message to flood the zone, tell everybody the problem is immigrants, get everybody down to the protests, make your videos, put them on Facebook, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your mum. And what you've basically seen is the far right using basically exactly the model that I've been saying we need to do for years, which is we put a message out on here and all of you take it, run with it, make your own videos, spread it in your community, spread it amongst your family. And what they've shown is, It works. And we need to do it. We need to do it better. We need to copy them. So to be clear here, I am trying to make a pitch that essentially this needs to be the story. The story needs to be growing inequality of wealth is destroying living standards. If you don't do anything about the billionaires, your kids will be poor. We've got plenty of videos out there that I think support that story. The best ones are probably the Squeeze Out or the Channel 4 video with Krishna Guru Murphy. But we need to get behind this. We need message discipline. And I want this video, really, this is a call out to the left, to the centre, to the centrist dads. If you want to stop Nigel Farage from winning the next election, you need to get behind a story. You need a story. I think we are the second loudest story in the room. I think we are a story that can win, but we need you to get behind it. We need some message discipline. We need people to be willing to put their egos down for a little bit, pick the message that's going to win, get behind it, get out there, make the videos, get spreading it. Because if we do not win the battle for salience, we will lose the control of the country. The last thing I wanted to talk about was introduce this concept of a bifurcated society. And this is something which I've been thinking about a lot recently, which is the idea that as wealth inequality increases, it kind of splits society into two groups, which is wealth gets sucked out of ordinary families and they start to become poor. But you have this group of societies, this group of families at the top, which become unbelievably wealthy. And as the top gets richer and the rest get poorer, these groups kind of separate off from one another. And what that leads to is a situation where all of these elites in society, which includes the politicians and the policymakers and the economists, basically have a very poor understanding of what is happening in ordinary people's lives. And it makes them basically unable to sort of view these people with compassion. And I've been thinking about this more through going to these protests and talking to people at the protests. Because what I found when I went to the protests was a lot of people who have had a very difficult time in the last few years, and in particular had a difficult time during COVID and since COVID, that have become very, very distrustful of the societies that they live in. And what struck me really was how in many cases they were kind of right to be distrustful, because they think the politicians don't care about them, and to a degree, that's right, the politicians don't care about them. They feel like they're ignored, and to a degree that they are ignored. They feel like their financial position is bad and their financial futures are uncertain. And those are true facts as well. And they don't really understand why. And I think it's important to recognise that if you put somebody in that kind of situation where their life is insecure, their future is insecure, their family is insecure, things are changing, they don't understand why, they don't feel connected at all to the media on the TV, or like they're having the situation explained to them, it's kind of normal to go crazy. And this reminded me, so I've not spoken about this much on the channel, but my parents are Mormons, and Mormonism is a kind of a very strict kind of American Christianity. And what's interesting about that is a lot of people think that Mormonism only exists in America, but there's actually a lot of Mormons all over the world. And the reason that there's a lot of Mormons all over the world is the Mormons send young men and young women dressed in very smart sort of white shirts all around the world to knock on people's doors and to tell them, hey, do you want to become a Mormon? And it is surprisingly successful. And three of my grandparents were converted to Mormonism by these guys who came knocking on the doors. And sometimes I've wondered, you know, what it was about, you know, my dad's parents are very sort of stiff upper lip, English, working class people, why they became Mormons. But, you know, my granddad, he came back from the war. He was a member, he was in the army since before the war started. You know, he probably killed people in Egypt. And I think maybe he was in a bit of a confused emotional space. And you get a couple of young, preppy looking Americans in nice smart shirts knock on your door and say, hey, you know, we're going to teach you about God. Come with us. We're going to give you a community. We're going to give you a space where you feel safe. We're going to give you a future. I think if you put someone in a space where they feel unprotected and unsupported and confused, and somebody knocks on their door with a smiling face and a handout and says, we're going to be here for you, we're going to support you, a lot of people are going to go. And when I went down to that protest, and I saw the protesters on one side and the counter-protests on the other side, shouting at each other and calling each other names, I found it quite upsetting, to be honest. And I couldn't help but ask myself, before I call these people names, have I knocked on their door with my hand out? Have we been there to offer them a story of hope, a future, something that can bring us together? Rather than driving us apart. Because I worry if that is the future of this country, half of us on one side of the road, half of us on the other, shouting names at each other, responding to hatred with more hatred. I wonder whether this could get worse and worse. I think if the working people of this country are divided, that's only going to benefit the rich, and ordinary families will get poorer and poorer. But if we're united, we can win. So this video is ultimately about the importance of understanding how the media works, salience, storytelling, how we win the future. But I think more than that, it's about whether we're able to view each other as people and with compassion. Because if we can do that, then we can come together. And if we can come together, we can win. So that's the end. Good luck.
Thank you.